Tossed Popcorn is a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi, I'm Sienna Jekyll.
And I'm Liana Holston.
And welcome to Tossed Popcorn, the podcast where two idiots watch every film on the AFI's 100 Greatest American Movies of All Time, the slightly less racist 10th anniversary edition.
This podcast is a safe space for people who don't know anything about movies. Today, we're watching Lawrence of Arabia.
Nothing is written.
Number 7 on the AFI list. Warning, there will be spoilers about this film, which is about an event that's over a century old. Get over it.
Liana, I have no idea how you're going to feel just generally about this film. I am so curious.
Oh, baby, we got a World War I film on our hands, friends and family, and I am blessed. I got to hear what you thought this movie was going to be about. Did you know anything about this movie going into it?
I'd seen this movie.
Oh, shit. Okay. Well, I will pull up your prediction now.
Howdy, Liana. Sienna here. I am gearing up to watch Lawrence of Arabia. It's my father's favorite film, which is why I watched it on Father's Day a few years ago. But I don't remember a darn thing that happened. And that's because I, A, didn't understand the plot, and B, was distracted by how much sand was on the screen the whole time. What's it about? I'm going to guess it has to do with war, because those are the ones I usually space out for. So it's going to be a long one. I remember that much too. T-T-T-T-T-T-Y-L.
T-T-T-T-T. That's so funny. It's so funny to watch a 4-hour film and then not recall any of it, which is what I did with this one, I think. And we'll find out.
Hi, Sienna. It's Liana. I'm about to start watching Lawrence of Arabia. I don't know anything about this movie, except that I think a white guy does brown face for all of it. And I guess it's probably, there's a lot of sand. I imagine it's going to be a long story about a man, and I don't think I'm going to care about him. I really don't. Please pray. Love you. Bye.
Did you care about him or not?
No, I did not. But I was thrilled that it was set during World War I. So there were ups, there were downs, much like a sand dune, if you will. And I was right about white guys being in brownface, which was a real, real downside of the film.
Yep. This film indeed features Obi-Wan Kenobi in brownface the entire
that's
time.
That's who that is.
Yep.
Oh, shoot.
Yes, this brings me to my summary. Because, again, I saw this film a long time ago, did not take any of it in. I think I had a much different experience with it this time, and I'm excited to talk about it. But the thing that remained the same is that I left with just a very unclear understanding of what exactly had happened. I was not even really positive about what war was happening. So anyway, I'll explain my best attempt. Lawrence is a British military man of some sort. England is getting involved in the Middle East, ostensibly helping these Arab tribes escape Turkish control, but also obvi for their own gain. Lawrence does things his own way, starting off strategic, but getting more and more bloodthirsty throughout. All of this takes place in the desert or in a British military building place in Cairo. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's what I got. IMDb says, it's the story of T.E. Lawrence, the English officer who successfully united and led the diverse, often warring, Arab tribes during World War I in order to fight the Turks.
Yeah.
So I was close. I mean, I was right.
In a way. How did you not know it was World War I? They said trenches so early on. That's always how you know.
they never asked. No one ever...
They never asked? They never broke the fourth wall and said, hey, just checking in. What war do you think we're in?
To which I would have gone, probably World War I, based on the pants.
Yeah, honestly, the pants are a good giveaway. Well, would you like to hear some historical context about this movie?
I would love to.
Okay. And we all should thank our lucky stars that I had to drive 18 hours this weekend and was so exhausted that I didn't have a lot of time to do this research because, the wormhole I could have gone down. Lawrence of Arabia is a 1962 film about Thomas Edward Lawrence, who was an intelligence officer in the British Army. He was born in 1888 and was an archaeologist in Syria before the war. He spoke Arabic, which is why they ended up using him as a liaison between the British and the Arab forces. And he was sent in October of 1916 to meet Sharif Hussein's sons, the third of which is Emir Faisal, Prince Faisal from the film, who we see him meet. Mm-hmm. And he was sent to basically go help the Arabs because they were seen as like could be a helpful ally to the British against the Ottoman Empire, who had allied with the German Empire and the Austro-Hungarian Empire during the war. This is a good reminder that World War I, a lot of empires coming into play, and the downfall of a lot of empires or the beginning of such for the globe. Oh my God. I just love this war so much.
She is beaming. She is sweating happily.
So T.E. Lawrence spearheaded a guerrilla campaign against the Ottoman Empire with these Arab tribes that Sienna mentioned earlier. They united together, they banded together to go basically conquer a lot of land that the Ottomans had taken control of. T.E. Lawrence also, after the war ended, advocated for freedom for Arabs because a big part of Britain getting the Arabs to join their quest was promising that they would be given freedom from the Ottoman Empire and just from any empire after the war was over and have autonomy. Classic Britain, they were not telling the truth.
Nice. Yep.
Which is why Lawrence was advocating after the war. He was a translator for Prince Faisal in negotiations, and that's where he saw sort of upfront how the West was not listening to these tribes from the Middle East. He genuinely did die via yeeting off his bike, as we see in the film. And at his funeral, Winston Churchill deemed him, quote, one of the greatest human beings alive in this time, which is actually, I'm just hearing it now, very funny, because famously, you're not alive during a funeral. A bit about the Ottoman Empire, because they kept saying the Turks during this film. And I was like, wait, hang on. I can't quite remember Turkey's involvement in World War I. Can't remember how it worked. So the Sultan of the Ottoman Empire declared war on Great Britain, Russia, and France, was allied with Germany, and was considered a threat to the British Empire because of the British Empire's key locations in the Middle East. Like they had control of the Suez Canal, and they also had control of sea access to India. And so there were major things that Britain was very, very invested in maintaining control of. And that is why they entered the war sort of stage in the Middle East. And one other thing to note is that during this time in 1915 is when the Armenian genocide began, which was done by the Ottoman Empire. So just to put that in the timeline as well. The Arab Revolt specifically was considered one of the better known campaigns of war that didn't take place on the Western Front during World War I. It started in June of 1916, and they were following along the Hejaz Railway, which we see in the film, because that was basically the Turks' only supply line. The Arab tribes would take over parts of it, led by Lawrence or other people, and just cut off their supply lines, which is a big tactic that they used. One major occurrence that happened during this Arab revolt was taking over the port of Aqaba, which is a huge plot point in this film.
Aqaba!
That's right. And that's on the border of Palestine. It was captured on July 6th, 1917, huge year, by Bedouin tribesmen, who were led by Lawrence. It was really significant because it got the entire Red Sea under Allied control. Okay, I'll stop there.
Thank you, Liana. Thank you. Very helpful for this movie, especially. Just to reiterate, Liana has been smiling. I could see her full teeth smiling this whole time. She's been spinning around, dancing, just waving her arms around, just having a ball. So I'm so happy to start this off with such a joyous memory for me.
I just find this war very interesting to study because it's not the one that gets focused on all the time in school, even though America still is like, we helped so much, we won it, you're welcome, like they do with all the wars. Yeah. They really love to focus on World War II.
And you know what? This was actually quite interesting as a war movie. And I guess it's time to get into it. Shall we move on to phone notes?
Yes, we absolutely should.
The first thing we need to talk about is that it starts off dark and music plays.
An overture.
For about, I don't know, 3 minutes or something.
I thought my visuals were not working on my laptop.
How did you feel about it? How did you feel about that effect? Complete darkness, just music.
I specifically got the same feeling that I get when people sing Happy Birthday to me, which was like, I don't know where to look or sort of how to physically be in this environment. And I don't understand, like, can you imagine an audience in a movie theater just experiencing an overture? Like, what do you do? I feel like you have to do something, but you can't look at anything. So what, do you look around? Do you sort of like hold hands with your neighbor?
I feel like you just sort of be.
That's not something I'm able to do.
I'm holding hands is a good idea though. I need to go back to that. I was with my family and we did hold hands.
Oh, nice. I was alone in a hotel in Utah, so... I was really thrown at the beginning because I was like, I know there's supposed to be a lot of sand and we currently are sort of in an English hamlet on a motorcycle and I don't understand how we're going to get from one place to another. I also have no clue what year it is. This opening scene, truly insane.
Oh, baby. I mean, I didn't remember this from my time watching it. This was chaos. This was unreal. So it begins, as Liana had mentioned, he does die in a motorcycle accident. T.E. Lawrence really died in a motorcycle accident. And that's the first thing you see. Very first scene.
I wrote down, wow, short movie.
Have you seen Downton Abbey?
No.
Okay. This is a huge spoiler.
Oh, maybe don't.
Oh, okay. If you know, you know, people out there. This reminded me of a scene on a road. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, great. I couldn't believe they started with him just getting thrown off a motorbike. I was so confused.
I also thought this was going to be a very mellow sort of movie is kind of what my memory of it was. So to start off with something so metal.
Wait, it's so funny that your memory of a film about World War One was that it was mellow.
I remember the sand and watching it on Father's Day and it being very long. So I'm sure I just didn't even look at the screen much. Yeah. So, okay. Starts off motorcycle. Boom. He dead. Boom. We're at a funeral. Lots of silly British talking.
So many men in top hats.
Yes. And then flashback to his time in the war.
Yes. Why is this still a question? I really was thinking when they were doing this funeral thing, I was like, are they going to do a Citizen Kane and just interview people about this guy's life? And then I also wondered, like, do you think men know how to make a movie that's not a flashback? So far, a few on the list have been flashback style, starting with like a man at the end of his career or life being like, I've lived.
It's true.
They go back to him younger and hotter and then proceed from there.
Watch as he becomes too big for his britches.
Yeah.
Liana, I've just sent you an audio clip. This is from very early on in the film, I think about 15 minutes in.
Sienna versus war.
Okay, so we are 14 and a half minutes in, and
early.
Right now two men are talking in a room, and I have just taken in none of what has happened. For myself right now, I'm trying to figure out what Lawrence's job is.
Yep.
I know this has to do with war. I'm guessing he's a soldier, and I've never thought about, you know, like where soldiers like hang. And I guess this is in this big open floor plan war building. Anyway.
Oh my God, I love this so much because I just love remembering how little you think about war.
I'm like, why are they?
Compared to how much I was like, yes.
Every time they talked about negotiations and things, I was just like, what are they doing? One thing that I'm going to kind of keep going back to throughout this is that I did keep thinking that Lawrence is the original manic pixie dream girl.
Okay. This makes so much sense.
You know, he's like clumsy. We see later that he really finds whimsy in life.
Which we will be talking about. Are you thinking about when he was singing on the camel?
No, I wasn't even thinking about the singing. I was thinking about when, yeah, Ali. Is it Ali?
Yeah. Played by Omar Sharif. Very hot
Omar
man.
Sharif, very hot man. Yes.
So hot.
When Omar Sharif burns his white people clothes.
Yes.
And then he's wearing robes, Bedou robes.
Okay, yes. This moment, this is incredible. This is peak cinematography and just peak cinema, I would say, is this man goes and just has a moment in the desert in his new outfit.
Just runs around, whimsical. Oh,
it's
love
and
it's
life. Like he just left a sale at like Express. As if he were me in middle school. And then he's just showing off his sequined skinny jeans.
Yep. A Maxinista. he is a manic pixie dream girl. So anyway, yeah, keep that in mind as we go through this. I couldn't believe it.
He also sits atop a camel and just scream sings at the top of his lungs in the desert when he discovers that he's in a canyon that echoes.
Oh, he sings
like, yep, like a pastoral English tune.
He's quirky.
Feeling parched? Get some water during these ad breaks. We'll be right back.
Here's a note I wrote. Peter O'Toole.
Peter O'Toole.
Peter O'Toole, colon, what a nose.
Huh. I think you sort of have an eye for noses in a way that I do not. Like, they sort of impact you more.
Yeah.
Say more about his.
Peter O'Toole's nose. So I've taken a film class before, and they said that the face and the hands are what show emotion. And particularly on Peter O'Toole, I think his nose is sort of the emotional center of his acting.
Okay.
It sort of flares. It's very distinct, very high contrast.
That's incredible that it was his nose when his piercing blue eyes were right above that for 4 hours.
I didn't look at them much.
Are you kidding? That's all I could look at. They also look crazy on this film. I don't know if it's like because it was the remastered edition or they just really put a filter on them or he really genuinely had these blue eyes, but wow.
Beautiful film.
Beautiful film?
Did you think it was pretty?
Do you mean just like the landscape photos?
Oh my gosh. I mean,
the
all
shots
of
the landscape. Well, here's my thing, okay? I have to say again, I was driving through Utah while I experienced this film. I also had to do what you did with Gone with the Wind and watch half of it one night and then half of it the next because I had to go on a sunrise hike in Arches National Park. Okay. She's outdoorsy.
Okay, so what you're saying is driving through beautiful Utah and looking at the beautiful nature at a national park made it so that you couldn't even appreciate how pretty this was because you were too used to the beauty of...
Not that I was used to it, but that I was like, this is what I have been seeing all day. So in some ways, I feel I am sort of living this film.
Oh, really? Okay, truly. Truly which, being near the desert
like,
made it.
As a white woman who was traveling comfortably in a Prius, maybe is not my like place. But I just was so immersed in that same environment that I started to really lose it in terms of like what is real versus what is the movie. All of this looks so similar because desert.
No, I get that.
So very beautiful, very striking. But also, I was stressed while I was driving through it because I was like, if the Prius breaks down, if Petunia doesn't make it, I'm in the desert. I'm watching a film about people having a hard time in the desert.
You don't have a camel to save you. How concerned were you about sunscreen for this man?
I was more concerned actually about sunglasses.
Oh, the eyes again.
Because this man was so much tanner than I was. I couldn't even like fathom what it is like to be that tan, which we're talking about a man named Peter O'Toole. And I am saying he was tan.
Peter O'Toole.
But really the sunglasses are what got me because so much of it is him sort of stoically staring into the distance.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. Man, you know, camels run funny.
I have a whole segment for you about camels.
About camels? Yes!
Okay, should we do it?
I freaking loved the camels in this movie. I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Okay. I highlighted for you every time that I wrote about the camels in the film.
Yes!
Here we go. I zoned out for a while and they were still on camels in the desert. Camels are so fucking weird.
Yeah, baby.
Someone just fell off their camel? A loose camel? Ominous. The sounds camels make are bazonkers, but a real vibe. Why are camels the way that they are? How did evolution make this happen?
True.
Where is the camel? I'm sorry, I'm so much more focused on the camels than I am on the people or the plot of this film. Shouts out to the camel for getting the hell out of there during the quicksand scene. I'm sorry, but where are the other two camels after the quicksand scene? Once again, in all capital letters, camels are so weird. And finally, 1,000 camels. Guys, if you have had to watch a camel or sort of a camel adjacent situation for 4 hours, this would happen to you as well, because they are distractingly strange as creatures.
Mm-hmm. What you said about that you were more focused on them than the plot, I completely agree with that. And I think that's why I actually enjoyed this movie a lot. Because I love watching a camel, man. Camels are interesting.
They're baffling.
I'm a little bit obsessed with camels, I think, actually. Sometimes I just look them up on the internet to just look at them, see what they're up to.
Really?
Like you said, they're weird. Yeah, I do. I've drawn camels because they're very interesting to draw. And I used to have a Beanie Baby named Caramel Camel. That was my favorite toy when I was little.
That's cute.
I just love them.
But you must agree, like, they're just crazy.
Oh, no, they're fucked up. They're lumpy and dry. That's what they do.
That was my nickname in high school. Okay.
Lumpy and dry.
I do want to say, though, massive love to the guy who has to power walk through the desert. Do you remember that scene?
Oh, of course I remember that scene.
This is after the loose camel appears and everyone's like, uh-oh. And that's because somebody fell asleep atop their camel and took a topple right on down. And they lost him. And Lawrence has a real white savior moment where he's like, I will get him. I'll go get him. And for part of it, you just see this man. He sort of like, I guess, wakes up from his desert nap and is like, fuck. And then has to truly power walk through the desert.
But at least he made it back just to be shot in the head.
Just to be shot in the face. Multiple times. Lawrence really, I mean, literally overkill applies to this situation. Lawrence has to execute this guy because the guy got in a fight with a guy from a different tribe and killed him. And then Lawrence was like, okay, I'll just kill this guy so that nobody fights. And then it turns out it's the guy that he white saved in the desert. And so he's like, fuck. And then he shoots him once, shoots him twice, shoots him four more times in rapid succession. And it's like, probably he had passed away at that point. I think you got him. But that's sort of an early glimpse into the bloodthirst of T.E. Lawrence.
True. So there's two boys.
There's two boys.
Who kind of follow.
Yeah. I thought that they were imaginary. Pretty much. I thought they were maybe sort of like a Greek chorus.
Yeah, they kind of were.
Because nobody was acknowledging them, and it didn't seem like anybody could see or hear them for a while. But it turned out that that was just because they didn't respect them as human beings.
I loved them. They reminded me of us.
Oh my God, no, they both die in horrible ways. But we would, honestly, if we were in a World War One situation in the desert, we probably would die via quicksand and accidentally blowing ourselves up. Which one do you think you would be?
I'd definitely be quicksand. No. What would you be? Would you be quicksand or would you detonate?
This is interesting because I do feel like one of us would be one.
Detonating's more slapstick.
That's more you, I think. I think I would like read the manual on how to detonate that something properly.
Yeah.
I feel like the quicksand...
The quicksand is just so sad and slow.
The quicksand could happen because, like, I love hiking.
Yes.
So I could be out there in nature, kind of making an Instagram story to share with my hot friends. Just be like, I don't know if you know this, but I hike if anybody wants to take me camping and bone in nature.
You could really do a whole Instagram story as you're getting swallowed up by the sand.
Oh my God, this is, oh no. I gotta say, that quote, nothing is written, which was said a couple times.
Yeah.
You wrote 4 hours of a movie, my guy. Stuff was written down.
Okay.
T.E. Lawrence wrote a full ass book.
Nothing is written. Very. Yeah. Oh, actually, I wrote right here. Nothing is written - crusty ass voice. Because
so
he comes
crusty.
Back from the desert and is like, nothing is written.
Everyone is so dehydrated. I got to say, Lawrence had a real God complex for a lot of this film. And I don't know if you want to weigh in on that sort of as our Catholic resident of the podcast.
Yes. Oh, God, you say? Yes, yes, yes. This was just like all the other movies we've seen. I mean, this happens in a lot of these movies, it seems like, where they slowly become a God. And then, believe it or not, that hubris is not good for them. And it ends up hoisting their own petard.
Absolutely. I think for me, what really secured it was like all the sort of God or Jesus imagery when they had Lawrence in like all the all white robes, which I know that he did historically wear, but there's a scene where he's like standing atop a train, a Turkish train that they've just demolished. And he literally does sort of a crucifix victory pose. Mm-hmm. It's too much. Also, Jesus wasn't white. Stop saying that.
I know. I'm sorry. I brought my hand to my mouth. I was gobsmacked at you saying all this Christian imagery because I actually didn't notice a lot of that. But what I did write down a bunch of times is that it kept reminding me of Jesus Christ Superstar. And in retrospect, that's probably because they were doing Jesus things.
Yeah. And because a white guy was in robes in the desert.
No, I mean, mainly it was the desert thing. It was just being in the desert. Very good movie. Very, very good movie.
Oh, boy.
Intermission hits. And I wrote, intermission. Boy, you are too late.
So late. I had stopped it the night before, like an hour before the intermission happened, which I thought was the halfway point.
Tragic.
Also, what do you do during an intermission? Do you just sit there? Again, it's the same question as the overture. What did people do in the past?
Well, that's when they go to the lobby and they get themselves a snack.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Stop it. Stop it.
Let's all go to the lobby.
No, please no.
Let's all go to the lobby.
I worked so hard to get that song out of my head every time I leave a movie theater, and now you've just brought it back in such a vicious way. Stop it.
I'm sorry. I got far enough in that I had to continue. I had to finish it.
Do you remember the moment where they go through a dust storm? Which, wait, first of all, I care about this movie from the World War I stance, but I really think that Indiana Jones did White Boys in the Desert in a way more fun way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, even there's a dust storm in that movie, or maybe it's in Sahara, which again, White Boys in the Desert. There's a real sort of genre out there for White Boys in the Desert as films.
There is.
But the recent ones have done it in a more like, ooh, adventure way, where this was like 4 hours long and they took 20 minutes to make a point every single time.
Mm-hmm. These camels were very well dressed, by the way. They were looking great the whole time.
Okay. Do you remember the camel that had so many tassels on it?
That's how I saw them all.
I think it's when we first meet Ali at the well. He shows up on a camel that's got the best amount of tassels, which is so many.
I love it. I would wear anything those camels were wearing.
You would. I could see that.
Thank you.
Wait, oh my God, you absolutely would. And then you would do so much laundry and it would take you so long. And you'd be like, I used vinegar in this situation. I'd be like, how did that get involved at all? That feels like something you have to get out of a cloth. Clothes.
Clothes? Did you hear when he said clothes?
No.
I can't believe you just did it. Okay, I'm sorry. There's a note that I wrote at the very end. I think it's like my second to last note. I wrote, this movie is almost over and he just said clothes. It's the first time he said the word clothes in 4 hours, and he pronounces it clothes.
He biffed it.
He biffed it.
He was tired. It was a long film.
I just need a fresh pair of clothes. I think we're learning that horses are really the stars of all great cinema.
I was about to say, I said, oh no, when there was a train full of horses. Mm. I wrote down, this is so many horses. And then I wrote down, this is more horses than I have ever seen.
Every movie we watch, there are more and more. Exponentially, they increase.
Our group text for this podcast is called Horse Jail, and it's starting to feel like we are in horse jail.
We're in horse hell. Horse limbo.
Horse purgatory. Expanding the horse cinematic universe.
Horses played a huge role in American cinema, apparently, because all these first films, like, The sacrifices horses made for these films to be great. Mm-hmm. I mean, wow.
There was a toll on the horse community, for sure. If a horse went off to Hollywood, you said goodbye. You have to fare that horse well.
The horse gets on the bus, you wave goodbye.
Yeah, with one little hoof.
Like, I'm never going to see you again.
A horse gets on the bus? You think a horse takes a bus to Hollywood?
The Greyhound. Speaking of camels, we've come to the hump of the show where it's time to read some ads. We'll see you soon. The second time we see women in this film, they're all dead.
I was wondering, I was like, were those just a bunch of dead women? And they were, right?
Yeah.
What's the first time we see women? I can't remember.
They were the same, but they were alive.
Oh, shit.
Like literally standing in the same place. Yeah, one of the tribes. Actually, the women actually kind of sang them off.
Oh, yeah.
From the mountain.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, and that's really the whole role that women play in this film.
Yep.
Alive, then dead. No real other situation. I was wondering, because at this point, I was like, oh my God, if I'm confused, I wonder how Sienna is doing. Mm-hmm. Which is not a dig on you generally. It's like, because I sort of know about the war a little bit.
No, yeah.
And I had no clue what was going on.
I'm actually going to go ahead and send you another audio recording. This is from when they got to Aqaba.
Okay, Sienna versus War 3, Aqaba, spelled ACAB.
Misspelled, yes.
Okay, so they just took Aqaba. Big deal. And I'm now understanding that they went and they took it from the Turks. So the Turks probably took it over, and the British are probably like, we'll help you get it back. Okay. So they went and they took that back. But here's what I don't get about war is, like, so where is everybody? Like, are they prisoners now? Was it already a ghost town? Are they dead? What's happening? What was the society here before? I just don't get where everybody is. That's my war update. All right, bye.
I think that's a very valid question. Where is everybody during
where
war?
Where was everyone?
Honestly, a surprisingly or maybe sort of unexpectedly prescient commentary on, you know, refugees in war, on the displacement of local peoples due to war. Look at you.
Yeah, thanks.
I think this maybe was before this scene, but do you remember that scene, like right before he gets whipped? But he gets disrobed in a way that is erotic.
Yes, that was a very...
It's a horny scene.
Very horny scene.
Uh-huh. There's some kinky elements to this film. Like, I remember at the very beginning, he's putting out a match with his fingers, and he's like, you just have to let the pain not bother you, or something like that. And I was like, oh?
Liana is making the, you know, sort of side-eye emoji eyes right now.
I am the eyes emoji.
I wrote here, horny for killing.
Horny for killing.
Because when he's killing
T.E. Lawrence,
we get to a point in the film where he'd been strategic up until this point, or not up until this point. He'd been getting less and less sort of strategic. But at the beginning, he was more thoughtful about the kind of moves they made militarily. And then it gets to a point where
he really goes on like a white boy killing spree. And it's really tough to watch.
So they go on a big killing spree, basically, with the sort of a group that did not have anything to do with the mission that they were completing right then. And yeah, he's real just kind of crazy-eyed, horned up, looking the next stab victim, you know?
Yeah, there's a point in the film where he's talking to a British guy in Cairo, and he's like, I killed people in the war. And I was like, babe, it's war. Like, I get it. And then he goes, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I was like, babe.
Oh!
But I did read, and I must say, T.E. Lawrence did write a biography. It is on hold at the L.A. Public Library for me right now. And I think in it, he said that he like really regretted his role in the Arab Revolt. Now, I don't know how much that means. Like, I don't know if that means he regretted the violence and the sort of atrocities that he committed, or if that means he really regretted being like helping the Arab. I don't know. But anyway, I'll let you know once I've read the book.
This film does make you curious to kind of learn more. It does. It whets the palate.
Among other things. No.
That burnt my Mary necklace just burned me when you said that.
No. Your Catholic necklace.
Virgin Mary. Sorry.
Well, not for long. Yeah. Okay.
My skin, I have a rash.
The horniest episode yet. Lawrence of Arabia. There was a quote when the British people were talking, when they were talking with Prince Faisal at the end, sort of negotiating terms. One of the British men says, young men make wars, then old men make the peace. And I was like, stop letting men make decisions.
And the women die.
They're so bad at it. Like, wars are so stupid and such a male thing. I remember I did read a military history about the first month of the First World War, and it was so much of it was just like male ego and the concept of empires. And I was like, if men had just not been around, we could have been so much better off.
Literally, men are like, how can I bang an entire country?
That's war, man.
I would need to bang something bigger.
Oh, man. This is good. We've generalized about an entire gender, and we've also sort of reduced war to like a horny event.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Perfect. Let's move on to badges and tragedies.
Shall we? All right. So this is the part of the podcast where we award badges if things are good and tragedies if things are tragic or bad to us in this film. Okay. I have a lot of badges for this film.
Me
actually.
Too.
Oh, okay. A hilarious, chaotic opening featuring goggles and milk jugs. British men being generally silly. There was like a lot of silly British energy in this film.
Mm-hmm.
There was not much speaking in this film, actually, for at least the first part of it. Not packed with dialogue. And I found out that that really works for me. I like the empty spaces. There wasn't that much for me to interpret. I could just watch. The cinematography and editing were on point. I would truly hang almost any shot from this film on my wall. It was so pretty. I mean, I really, really, really loved watching it. And it was a damn fine production. Many scenes were very memorable, actually.
It's funny that you say that because you fully forgot the entire film the first time you watched it.
That's true. Yeah, that's the thing. I've changed my tune. Watching it this time was so, so different for me.
Dang.
That's maturing. That's maturing right there. And it's just really nice to see something so beautiful. Mm. Yeah, I just didn't appreciate that before. Hmm. And finally, final badge is for featuring the sound of 55 waking camels. Which I don't think you'll get from any other movie, at least on this list.
We might. We don't know. I mean, we had no idea how horse heavy this experience was going to be. And look at us now.
You are right.
I got a badge for a British man approaching a group of other British men and saying, "You, sir, who are you?" I just loved his energy. I was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's how you should start a conversation with anyone. Massive badge for World War One. As soon as that happened, because before that I was like, oh, I just don't want to be here. Like, there's so many men and I just don't know what's going on. And then somebody said the word trenches and I said, oh. Okay.
And your eyes went, boy, 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 boy.
I was the heart eyes emoji the whole time. I got to give a badge for a camel absolutely screaming. There were a couple of times that they said something about a camel that was like, oh, this camel's probably having a bad time. And then the camel just went, I got a badge for Lawrence being able to sleep anywhere because my guy, same. Oh. Lawrence falls asleep atop a camel. Lawrence, I have fallen asleep standing in an airport security line. I get it.
Yeah.
I am with you. A badge for a makeover that included a twirl. Do you remember this? When they give him his white robes and then one of them does do a twirl, like a finger spin indicator. And I was like,
kind of a fashion movie.
The only thing that was missing was like a little montage with sort of like a 1990s girl band pop song playing in the background. Yeah. I got two more. I got a very little blood, which TBH, I do appreciate. Like, I am conflicted because war is terrible and it's important to sort of indicate that and not valorize it. But I have no stomach for looking at blood, especially in color. And this was like a light day on a period. This was the right amount. And finally, the quote from one of the British men at the end who's asked about like, oh, how are you feeling sort of like about all of this situation? And he goes, on the whole, I wish I'd stayed in Tunbridge Wells. It was such a like British quote about the war. I wish I'd just stayed in my pastoral village instead of joining up and trying to be like my older brother or like my father who fought in Crimea. You know, it was colonizing. Just such, I loved it.
Yeah, that was a good line. Trages.
Mm-hmm.
I have a few. Trage one, a major character in brownface. Bummer. Yeah. Big bummer.
I think a couple, actually. I think a couple of white actors were in brownface.
Oh, shit.
I can't fully remember, but yeah.
There were definitely a lot of truly brown actors as well.
Yeah.
Just to be clear. Trage two. By the end, I was playing 2048, and I can't deny that. I thought it was very pretty, but by the end, it's they lost so me. It was pretty long. Pretty long movie. And number three, war. I see how that could be a badge for me. That's not what I want from a movie most of the time. Pretty good war movie, but
pretty good.
Trage for war.
Yeah. A trage for Lawrence must be so sunburned. So actually, yeah, you asked me about sunburns earlier, and this guy cannot be well. Like, if the bike didn't get him, the melanoma would have, you know?
Yeah, yep.
A trage for poor sound mixing, because I could not hear this on my laptop over the Utah air conditioner.
Oh, yeah. So it's Lawrence of Arabia's fault.
Yes. Where you were saying, like, I appreciated sort of the silences or, like, the not a lot of dialogue. I, the whole time, was like, is this on? Am I missing songs? What's happening? And finally, I have to give a trage for this could have been an email, which is the energy that this movie has, because the past was so difficult. And so much of this movie is like, I have to ride miles across the desert and lose a child in quicksand because I do not have the capacity to quickly G-chat a guy and just let him know in Cairo that we took this town.
Yep. That's a good one. That's a good trage.
Thank you. We now are going to do you a massive favor, which maybe you don't need. Maybe you will watch this movie. But if you don't want to lose 4 hours of your life to sand, we're going to do a segment for you called How to Pretend You've Seen This Film. This is for when you are at a rooftop happy hour and Beck, who went to USC undergrad, is coming up to you and he's bringing up Lawrence of Arabia. He's saying, oh my God, it's such a hot day, man. Like, this really reminds me of Lawrence of Arabia. Here are a few sentences you could say to pretend you've seen this film. No, Beck, I totally hear you. I really agree. I feel like the heat that we are experiencing and the heat that you see these men encounter in this film is really a powerful metaphor for the burden that war places on men specifically.
You know, Beck, I think in a way you could view Lawrence of Arabia as a love story between a man and his love of Arabia, perhaps.
Beck, have you seen a camel? Because what's going on there?
In Lawrence of Arabia, we're reminded about how frivolous the deaths of war are as we watch the frivolous deaths caused by Lawrence himself, particularly how he kills all his friends.
Wait, was that Obi-Wan Kenobi?
All right, next we have a segment, another favor for you all, which is called Should You Watch This Or? This is the part where we tell you if it's worth watching this movie or if you should do something else.
This is tricky for me because I frequently have said, you know, should you watch this or should you watch 1917? And both of those films are about a World War I military mission. And personally, I think 1917 did a better job because A, under 2 hours, yep. B, the score was more intertwined. So it makes it, you just get a sense of the urgency really well in 1917, where this film, because it's a film from the past, really took its time making any semblance of a point. I don't think anybody in 1917 is in brownface, and they've got one woman who talks. It is in French, but she talks.
It did kind of remind me of 1917 in that it's like a war movie that you can tell a woman was involved on. Because I think a woman edited this. I think it's just kind of, yeah. And you can just tell. When I want to look at the screen, that's how I know there was a woman involved in a war movie. Yeah, I would say for this film, I think watch it. I don't think you have to watch all of it because damn, it's long. Yeah. But it was so pretty. I mean, I really, really enjoyed watching it for at least the beginning. So it's just such a pretty experience. It'd be fun to watch at a party where it's like a party where you're watching a movie at the beginning. Or, you know, you have friends over, you're watching the movie at the beginning, but you're okay with kind of not watching it as it goes on, you know? And then you'll probably turn it off by like hour two.
What are these parties that you attend?
What is a party? That's kind of what I think they are.
You don't know anymore.
So anyway, most of all, though, what I'll probably do instead of watching it again is I will print out some of the images and put them on my wall. So cute. Maybe that's all you should do. How would you rate this film, Liana?
Okay. This was the best one yet for me, personally.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
I truly think it's because of the World War I of it all. But honestly, I would give this maybe 3 camels out of 5.
Wow.
TBH. I just was so happy to be there. And I was intellectually and sort of academically stimulated because I wanted to learn more. I was excited about it. Maybe 2.5 camels out of 5 because I was really confused and tired the whole time. But I thought it was interesting. I learned a lot about a historical event, which is always, I mean, that's why I love National Treasure. Wait, that's not right. That movie's fiction. But you learn about people who did exist. But I can't give it more than that because they put white actors in brownface and it was 4 hours long and it was all men and then some dead women. How about you, Sienna?
Yeah, well, I keep rating these things. My scale is all askew, but this one was actually a fun viewing experience. The part that wasn't boring, at least, the very beginning, especially like the first hour, it was fun for me. It was fun to comment on, and it'd be fun to watch with people. So I gave it 4 wells out of 5 because mine are all kind of askew. But yeah, I think it's a solid movie. I thought it's a good movie. I did remember thinking that so far out of all the ones we've seen, this is the one that I truly believe deserves to be on this list.
Hmm.
I truly believe that. It was so, so, so beautiful. It was a good use of the movie medium. And that I cannot say is often the case. I think I'd rather watch this than, well, maybe a miniseries would be good, but still, I liked it. All right. Well, we felt pretty positively about this film.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Interesting camels. Indeed. Camels, baby. If you know about camels, can you please reach out to us? You feel free
Someone's
to tweet us
at
Tossed Popcorn. We're on Instagram at the same handle, because I know I'm going to be thinking about camels for a long time because of this movie.
Thank you, everybody. Next week, we will be watching Schindler's List.
Oh, boy. Thank you. We love you. Bye.
Bye.
You can find us on Instagram as @SiennaJekyll and @LianaHolston. Please check the description for the spelling of our dumb names. We put out episodes every Tuesday, so make sure to subscribe so that you don't miss an episode. See you next week on Tossed Popcorn. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, check the iHeartRadio app.